Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. New York Times bestselling author Lisa Unger joins me today. We talked last year about Confessions on the 745, and today we're talking about her latest book. And, you know, Lisa's stories always tackle a number of topical themes, and this one is no exception. It's called Last Girl Ghosted. Think twice before you swipe. You know, ghosting is something we didn't hear about when, at least when I was in the dating field, we didn't hear anything about it. I do know people it's happened to, unfortunately, and it does seem fairly common practice today to end a personal relationship by just suddenly disappearing, by withdrawing from all communication without explanation. I don't know, it seems a cruel and cowardly act to me, but it certainly makes a great premise for twists and turns in a suspense novel. And some of the comments that people make about Lisa's book are chilling, brilliant and compelling, staggering, unsettling, fast-paced and twisty. So let me introduce Lisa. We'll bring her on. She's a New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of 19 novels. Her books are published in 29 languages and have been voted best of the year or top picks by The Today Show, Good Morning America, and others. And her nonfiction work has appeared in The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, NPR, and Travel and Leisure. And again, the name of the book is Last Girl Ghosted, Think Twice Before You Swipe. And here's my guest, Lisa Unger. Lisa Unger, welcome. Welcome back.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I have to tell you, I felt sure it was just weeks ago since we last talked. And I thought, she's written another book already? But then when I looked on our website, it was actually 14 months ago that we talked. But it seemed
it doesn't seem like long ago at all.
Yeah, so we talked last time about Confessions on the 745. Today we're talking about your 19th book, which is The Last Girl Ghosted. This is your 19th, right?
It is.
Yeah. Does that seem real to you?
it kind of doesn't, you know, because I'm actually just at, like, right in the like very final revisions on book number 20, you know, and when I typed the end on that first draft of book 20, I was really like, wow, you know, how is that possible? You know, how is that possible that, you know, I have written 20 novels, you know, and I just, you know, kind of felt really overwhelmed by, I think more than anything else, gratitude, you know, that I never wanted to do anything else with my life, and I just feel very grateful that I've been able to, you know, write 20 novels, each one of which, you know, feels very important and personal to me. And, you know, I know that each one is sort of, you know, the pinnacle of my ability.
Right,
at the time of its writing, you know, and I feel very, you know, grateful that I've been able to dedicate myself to fiction and to the craft in that way.
So, Lisa, before we move into the book, then, let's talk about what you attribute to that success in completing 20 books now.
Well, I think that, you know, I've been, you know, I have to go all the way back, you know, in that, you know, my mom was a librarian and an avid reader, you know, and I really do feel that, like, I learned my love of story from her. And, you know, I was a reader first, of course, like all writers, and, you know, that's where we fall in love with story and the pages of somebody else's book. And, you know, I feel that, you know, my dad, on the other hand, was like an engineer, you know, and he was sort of like, when I asked, you know, I think I want to be a writer, I think I'm going to do this with my life, he was kind of like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
that's not a job. People don't do that. And I was like, oh, And he's like, no, really, you know, like, I've got you covered through 4 years of college, and, you know, after that, you know, you're on your own. Like, don't write, you know, don't move home to, like, write your first novel. You know, you've got to get, like, a real job. I was like, oh, okay. And so I always had these kind of two different parts of myself, you know, this very creative, like, person who knew that she was a writer, and then this very kind of hardworking person who knew that she had to get a real job. Like, so I had these really two different influences. And I think that those things kind of dovetailed for me in my working life, because, you know, you do need to be both of those things.
Right.
But not to be a writer, but then to write 20 novels. You know, it's not just craft. It's not just magic. It's not just inspiration. Some of it's just, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. You know, you have to be able to make a commitment to a novel and stay committed to it over the course of a year and longer with revisions and, you know, until it winds up on the shelf. So it's a real combination of those two parts of my personality that I think have allowed me to, you know, to write and to have some success as a writer.
Yes, well, because there's no doubt that there's heavy work involved. You've got to get your butt in that chair. And we live today in this society where we all want instant gratification. So it takes real commitment and tenacity to see that through. So job well done. So let's talk about Last Girl Ghosted. Think Twice Before You Swipe is on the cover. And boy, yes, it does make you think twice. The book covers a lot of topics. But of course, the main theme is the dangers of online dating. So would you share in your own words the story? I don't like to give away any spoilers, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we first meet Ren, she's, you know, built a life for herself, right? She's a successful advice columnist. And, you know, she's come from a really dark past, but she's found her way into light. And, you know, she's worked really hard towards helping people. And by helping other people, you know, she's helped herself kind of overcome trauma. You know, the one area of her life that's not working quite as well, and that's her romantic life. And so her best friend, Jax, kind of pushes her into the world of online dating. And she sort of enters reluctantly. She has a few underwhelming encounters, and then she meets Adam. And when she falls for Adam, she falls hard. And they have this whirlwind romance. They have this, like, very exciting romance, and everything seems possible. And the city that she's lived in seems new again, and she's really, really, really in love. And then after a particularly romantic evening, Adam makes a request. He says, tell me something that you've never told anyone. And she does. And then the next day, Adam disappears. His social media profiles are gone. His cell phone has been disconnected. The place where she thought he lived, it's just a vacation rental. And Ren is gutted. She is absolutely heartbroken. So when a private detective shows up on her doorstep and tells her that there are other women who also thought they were in love with Adam, and all those women have disappeared, Ren decides that she is going to chase Adam's very dark digital trail into his past and into her own. And that is Last Girl Ghosted.
Yeah. One of the things that is interesting from the get-go is she kind of blamed herself for him disappearing, which, of course, is something you do talk about that in the book, too, that, you know, women tend to blame themselves for everything, every person's behavior toward them, every action toward them. And that, you know, it's not always the case, right?
No, not. And I think women do take on a lot of responsibility for the bad behavior of men, and it, you know, maybe like sort of a larger cultural problem. But, you know, like as you say, that's just kind of one aspect of the book. You know, the book was really inspired by this idea of online dating. You know, I had a really young friend who, you know, was talking to me. And, like, I've been married for 20, you know, I personally have been married for 21 years. So when I was first dating, there was not dating apps, you know. There was just the new dating websites and stuff. And I had met some people online, and I had found it a little bit weird. ultimately, I met my husband the old-fashioned way, you know, in a bar.
Right.
And she was talking about these apps and she was saying, you know, it's just you keep swiping and swiping and swiping and it's the next one and the next one and the next one. And how do you know, how do you ever know if you've chosen the right one? The question just kind of seemed like a broken question to me. It was like, well, you know, you're not shopping for a toaster. You know, like you're not looking through reviews on Amazon for the best toaster that you can buy. Like this love is a head trip. It's not an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so that was really the thing that interested me the most was not so much the online dating, but how the technology has rewritten the way we relate to each other, that has rewritten this primal activity of finding a mate, you know. So that was really that was another one of the major themes, you know, in addition to, you know, women kind of blaming themselves, like, oh, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I shouldn't have been walking in the dark. I shouldn't have gone back to this hotel room. You know, all of those things that we say to ourselves when we're trying to, you know, take responsibility or at least find some way maybe it won't happen again next time a man behaves badly.
So what point did you decide that to write a novel about this theme of online dating? You know, because it's one thing to have a conversation, but a whole thing to have another book and the intrigue
Absolutely.
That you put into it. So what point did you think, yes, I've got enough here and this is what my story is going to be?
Well, you know, so how it usually works for me is there's this moment, right? Like, so it's that moment, right? The, you know, that conversation where you really start thinking about something that's like, huh, it's interesting, you know, like, how is this affecting the way we relate to each other? How is online dating affecting the way we relate to each other? And so from that point, there's just, I sort of become obsessed with whatever question I'm asking myself, right? And so I start doing my research and start digging in. And I had to do a lot of research in this case because, like I said, you know, I have not been online dating, on a dating app for myself. You know, and I really needed to kind of dive into not the technology, like the dating app in my book is fictionalized, you know, because, you know, I sort of wanted to make my own rules about how things worked for that particular app. But, you know, you wind up doing this deep dive into research and trying to figure out the way things work and how is it affecting the way people feel. And how is it affecting these relationships? And so the best way I can describe it then is if it connects to something deeper, something bigger that I'm asking myself or something that I'm, you know, deeply intrigued upon about, then I start to hear a voice or voices. And those voices lead me through the manuscript. So it was really Ren's voice that was the entry into the story. And once I have the voice, then I follow the voice through the narrative. The research is really just a foundation, maybe even like kind of a scaffolding.
Mm-hmm.
The book is not about online dating. It's about people and their relationships to each other and how we lie to each other and how we lie to ourselves and, you know, trauma and how, you know, like the waves of trauma move through your life and how they affect the choices that you make.
Yeah, because she's quite a complex character. Ren is not a simple character by any means.
No,
And some of the choices she makes you kind of question, but she, you know, she's had a traumatic past and she's pulled herself together. She's got this podcast, Dear Birdie, her advice column, Dear Birdie. So she's pulled herself together and, you know, you think that somebody who's giving advice to others has it all together. But at the end of the day, she's human, just like all of us. And she's got these...
Exactly. It's like we all have such great advice for our friends.
Yes, really.
We often don't have such great advice for ourselves.
Easy to talk from the stands, right? Not so easy on the playing field.
Exactly.
So talk to us about how her voice came to you and, you know, how you kept her flawed and brought that into the story, but still made her likable, because it's, you know, it's a fine line there.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I think we're all pretty unreliable narrators of our lives, you know, and we're all flawed in some ways, you know, like, and to me, that's what makes people lovable to me. You know, it's not what's, you know, not necessarily what's so great about them. It's about all the different ways that they're, like, sort of working and muddle through, you know, because that's all of us, right? We all, you know, we all have one image that we present to the world and it may look very polished, but we're all just kind of making it up as we go along, right? Like, the idea that there are some people who just have it all together and they're, you know, they're exactly perfect all the time. Like, the idea that there would be that kind of person is pretty unrealistic, you know, and I think that when you get too into your character's qualities, the more elevated you try to create your character, the less relatable they are to your readers, you know. And I, so it's, for me, it's the flaws that make people interesting in my life, and it's also the thing that makes me fascinated and connected to my characters, you know. And our flaws don't necessarily make us unlikable, you know. And and trauma is very tricky, you know. So trauma is something that, you know, I've done a lot of research on, and I've delved deep into it in my, you know, in my research. I've experienced trauma. I know what the aftermath of trauma feels like. I know how, you know, your brain starts to play tricks on you after you've experienced something very frightening, very dark. And I'm interested in that journey. I'm interested in the journey from, you know, the very worst day to, you know, your sort of walk towards the light, towards the new normal of what your life can be afterwards. And so those are all things that I kind of really explore in all my characters. And that's, you know, how I connect with them is through the ways they're struggling, as opposed to the ways they're struggling towards the light. That's the journey that I'm always most interested in for my characters. And they're going to make a lot of mistakes. And a lot of times, even as I'm, you know, in the writing, in the, you know, the telling of the story, I'm like, you know, you really should not be doing that. But there's really not not a whole lot you can do. Sometimes you just have to let your characters make their mistakes and find their way back home.
Right. And the story is told in Mia's voice, so I would imagine that was an organic approach there. It seems that it wouldn't have been the same story any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are multiple perspectives, but it's really Ren's voice and it's really her story. And she really is the guide through everything, or she's really the link to all the other characters. So everybody's, you know, has a different perspective on her. And she has a different perspective, of course, on each of the other characters in the book, but she's the main voice and the one we spend the most time with.
Right, right. It's interesting, online dating. I have many, many friends who've done it and had the most disastrous stories, but I also have about four or five who've actually ended up getting married and seem pretty happy. So I always joke, I've never done it myself, but I always joke, well, I found my dog online.
Exactly. That's the really interesting thing about online dating. Like, when you like, in my research, like, one of the most interesting things I found sort of early on is the evolution of this concept of finding a mate, right? Once upon a time, your pool was very, very small. It was like your village. Right,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And the expectations of that mate were relatively small as well. You know, it was like procreate, you know, safety, security, procreation, right? And then as, you know, as society evolved, you know, and, you know, agriculture came about, and then the settling of cities and settling of cities and towns around agriculture, the pool became exponentially bigger and bigger and bigger. And expectations, appetites, desires, what we expected from our relationships, changed very much at that time as well. And then it didn't change that much at all until enter, you know, online dating. And then all of a sudden the pool is not just national, but global. You have access to people, you know, everywhere, all over the world. And the expectations could be anything at this point, right? Like, what we want from each other is very different than what we used to want from each other, what we used to need from each other. And so I found that very fascinating, like, how it has changed. And certainly, yes, I too know people who have had, you know, really nightmarish experiences online dating, and also people who are you know, happily married now, good friends that are happily married and have been, you know, for 15 years. And so it is possible to find love online. It yeah. is, of course. It's possible to find love anywhere. It's possible to find love in the grocery store, right? It's possible.
Right, right.
In the dog pound.
At the airport, I did, at the airport.
At the airport, exactly. Anywhere in the world is possible to find love. It's also possible to find a victim or a predator.
Absolutely.
Or to be subjected to a con or whatever it is. This is possible everywhere, but the internet just kind of opens up a lot of doors that, you know, weren't open to us even, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right. So there's a great quote at the start of the book. You wrote the book in three parts, Ghosted, Rewilding, and I Am the Storm, and I want to talk about that in a minute. But I just want to talk about the quote that you open the book with. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures, we come of age as mask by, I think that was Rainer Maria
Rilke.
Yeah. That kind of stopped me in my tracks. Tell me what it means to you.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, and a little bit it kind of makes me think of trauma, you know, because as you grow up, you learn what you have to be to survive, right? And if you grow up in a loving, nurturing environment, you know, you maybe learn to just be yourself, you know, but even within that healthy sort of normal upbringing, you find all these different masks. You know, you wear one mask for your parents, one mask for your friends, one mask for your children later, for your husband. And it's not necessarily a falsehood or a lie. It's just that these are different elements of the self. You know, we all have, you know, multitudes within us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rilke is, he's been a poet that I've just loved all my life. And, you know, his poems are really, you know, they're often extracted, like, for, you know, to talk about love or other things, but they're really his love letters to God. He's really talking to God in his poetry. And, you know, he's very much so, like, you know, in awe of the power of, you know, God and the world and being a human being, you know, God's creation and all the various elements of that, from the horrible to the wonderful, right? You know, like in just a completely cerebral, non-religious type way, right? And, you know, the union of nature and, you know, and man's desire and whatnot. Like, these are all big themes within Rilke's work. And so that particular quote, you know, I've always felt is just so true, such a true statement about, you know, how we evolve from being a little baby, you know, completely pure, from the womb, you know, just the self, right, the id, and then how we learn all these different ways to survive and ways to be and different ways to approach different elements of our lives. And then in trauma, of course, you know, even more so, you know, there's an even greater split between the parts of ourselves. And so that was, you know, that was why that quote spoke to me for this book.
Yeah, it kind of, I read it and I flipped the page and I had to go back to it and read it again. I thought it was pretty powerful. So let's talk about the structure of the book, because you begin with a prologue and then it's in three parts. There's always that, you know, everlasting discussion around prologue. No, don't do it. Yes, do it. No, don't. I always read the prologue. I know readers who say they never read the prologue. I don't know why, because I see it as part of the book. But tell us why you chose
Absolutely.
To. Yeah.
You know, like, ignore my prologues at your peril. They are a significant piece of every single book. They are the entrance into every story for me as the writer and for you as the reader. And there's all different layers that you're going to get from the book that you still can read the book without reading the prologue, but you're not going to get the full experience. And I do not know why people don't like prologues. I love a good prologue, writing it and reading it. And I think, you know, whatever, you have to respect the story, right? The story tells itself in the way that it tells itself, right? And
right.
So that's true for me. It's telling itself to me in a certain way, and that's how I'm bringing it forth to my reader. So the reader has to just respect how the writer chose, or how the story told itself through the writer.
Right,
and
right.
To respect the story.
Yeah. And talk to us about the three parts, why you chose to do the three parts.
That I don't, you know, there's not a lot of choosing for me, you know, when I'm writing. Like, I don't choose the tense, I don't choose the character, I don't choose, you know, the structure. It sort of just kind of evolves in this really organic way. You know, we always talk about the difference between different kinds of writers, you know, the outliner and then, you know, the gardener, which is how I kind of view the way I do things, you know, or like the plotter versus the panther, you know. Mm-hmm. I really see my effort as a storyteller really as like a form of gardening. Like, the seed gets planted or something starts to grow, and then, you know, you water it, you give it light and air, you trim it, you edit it, you know, you clip off the dead leaves, these kinds of things. Like, that's how I view the evolution of the story, is something that I planted and then grow over the period of a year or sometimes more. And I really kind of, you know, respect how, natural breaks, chapters, voices, like, none of that is a choice. Like, oh, I'm going to end the chapter here and start up again here. Like, there's nothing like that for me. It's all fully organic.
Mm.
But in this case, you know, I guess I just, you know, like every other novel, just kind of followed that, you know, that space and the titles in each section, you know, meant something to me. And so that's as much choice as I think went into deciding that something is going to be three parts or two parts or no parts, just one whole.
Yeah. Well, tell us what I Am the Storm meant to you, the third part.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something that, you know, has actually, unfortunately for me, has taken on, like, a different meaning since I wrote the book. But what it always brings to mind is, like, you know, this sort of quote that you see or you hear a lot, and I don't even know who to attribute it to, but it's, like, this idea that you are told as a woman that you are not strong enough to face the storm,
mm-hmm.
and that something within you tells yourself that I am the storm, and you're not separate from nature. That you are powerful enough to survive the circumstances that life throws at you. And there's also, you know, a little bit of a Rilke element to that as well, where he says, you know, when he is in one of these love letters to God, he writes, "You are not surprised by the force of the storm," meaning, like, you know how powerful, how wild, how, you know, how out of control existence can be. So that was a little bit of that element for me as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to have to check out some of Rilke's work. I haven't read any of his work.
It's incredibly moving and beautiful. And, I mean, if you're, you know, sort of in that, you know, in that headspace, you know, that sort of seeker's headspace, like, he's really, like, the voice of the seeker, you know,
yeah.
Looking for answers, you know, in the universe, in nature, in divinity. He's a very powerful writer.
Yeah. So, without giving away any details, what was the most difficult part of writing Last Girl Ghosted for you?
I don't really ever view things that way. You know, the story, you know, the books, every novel is like kind of a relationship. You know, it's like a long-term relationship. And so, like all long-term relationships, you have kind of good days and bad days. You know, you have days that are magical, you know, and you can't keep the pages from coming, and it's all there before you. You know, you see everything very clearly, and then you have these ebb days where you're just like sitting there going, okay, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen next. I can't hear the voices.
Right.
And you just kind of sit there and get mad, and then you, then you get up and go bake a cake or go to the gym or anything, like, you know, physical and different, like put in a load of laundry or whatever. And then you hear the next thing, or you hear the voice again, or you see the next scene or whatever it is. And then you go back to it, and it's all good again, you know? And that's kind of like any organic process. there's just kind of an ebb and a flow to every novel. Like, you just have these great days and these days where you're just, I always think of them as like gestation days, like where all the ideas are kind of mingling and eventually something is going to form itself in your imagination, maybe while you're sleeping, maybe while you're exercising. And so this is kind of the, you know, this is kind of the whole, this is kind of the whole process. It's the process every time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just honestly though just really love everything about writing. There really isn't a place where I'm unhappy, you know. It's a joy for me.
Well, that's a good job. That's a good job.
Yeah.
And I think that I always say creativity needs space. And by that, I mean, sometimes you do have to step away and do something entirely different. And your subconscious is working away, gathering whatever it needs. And all of a sudden it's like, yes, I can't wait to get back to my laptop.
Yes, exactly. And you have to have that patience and that knowledge of the process, right? You have to have that knowledge of your creative process, and just kind of, and it's a little bit of an act of faith. You know, you start with just a voice in your head and a vague idea, and you know, you just have to believe that the story is there, and you're just gonna work until you find it. And that's kind of how I experience it.
Yeah. Well, it's always great talking with you, Lisa. I want to ask you before we go today how Lisa Unger takes care of herself, how you rejuvenate yourself, how you refresh yourself.
I love that question because I have really been wondering about that a lot lately. I have a yoga and a mindfulness and meditation practice, which sustains me through, you know, pretty much everything in my life. But I really decided that, you know, the year ahead is going to be like an extra focus on things that nourish and renew, and to really, you know, not allow life to kind of take you away from those practices, because, you know, especially the mindfulness and meditation practice, you always have to make that time to just be, to just sit and to let yourself feel and know and have that moment of just quiet. And I think that it's very easy to go, oh, I don't have time for this today because I have all these million other things that I have to do. And so my ongoing commitment to that practice, especially it's like in the year ahead, like, you know, sort of a New Year's resolution without it being that, because I hate the cliche of that, but just a real setting of my intention to focus more on the things that nourish and turn away more from the things that drain.
I love that, and that's a perfect end here. Lisa Unger, it's always such a pleasure to talk with you. I know listeners can find out much more about you and your work at lisaunger.com, and your latest book, of course, great read, Last Girl Ghosted. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I guess that, you know, this has been a crazy couple of years for everybody. You know, there's been a lot of darkness and a lot of loss and a lot of division between people. And I guess if I could leave people with one thing, I would just say to, you know, take the time to love yourself, and in loving yourself, make sure you love others as well.
I love that. I think
there's a quote
in your book about one of your characters had said things like, you know, be kind. You may not love everyone, but you can be kind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And love wins. Love wins at the end of the day. So just continue to return to that place, even if you're in a place of anger or frustration at any point during your day or during your month or your year. You know, just try when you can to return to that idea that, you know, love is what's going to get us through. It's not passive. It's active.
Absolutely. Active.
Yeah.
All right, Lisa Unger, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Vicky. It's always a joy to talk to you.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.